I would like first to thank very much the organizers for inviting me and giving opportunity to talk about our approach that were developed in DESI over past years. I would like to report about a kinetic equation approach to describe dynamics within irradiated samples. And yeah, this is a work that was performed in collaboration with Christoph Bostedt, who was here. That's unfortunately to leave. Henry Chapman, Stefan Hauige, Tim Lahrmann, Robin Santra, Fenglin Wong, and Elga Beckert, and Thomas Meller from Technical University in Berlin. And our motivation is that we wanted to, primarily motivation, describe dynamics within the samples irradiated with free electron lasers. This can be also generalized to other, and we were treating the wavelengths between VUV and soft X-rays, but this approach can be also generalized to shorter wavelengths and also to other kind of lasers. So I start first with the motivation for theoretical study. Our studies are important for experiments performed with free electron lasers, for cluster experiments, single particle imaging, and also Wontons matter. Then it's also important for the construction of the laser to know exactly what are the limits of the radiation tolerance, because the radiation is so intense that it affects also the construction elements of the laser, in particular the optics of the free electron lasers. And this is, of course, a very fascinating field to test various theoretical models. And I just present this slide that was already showed many times here. So let me show it only for a few seconds. So this is a structure determination for single particle diffraction imaging. It's important for us to have a possibly accurate way of determining how long the sample can survive in the free electron laser beam, what should be the parameters of the pulse in order to record the structure of the pulse before the radiation will destroy it. And of course, I show here this very well and spread and known simulation from the first paper in 2000 by the group of Janusz Hajdu in Uppsala. Yeah, so now I start to come to my stuff. So this is about statistical Boltzmann approach. We wanted to be able, and there's a variety of very good and widely used molecular dynamics tools for description of the evolution of irradiated samples. But here we wanted to construct something unique that is also able to treat larger systems, because computational costs of molecular dynamic tools, they increase dramatically with the number of particles. If you include the interaction of particles, so for example, Coulomb interactions, in the worst case, you get the scaling like n squared with the number of particles involved. Or if you use some more fancy methods to describe this interaction, you can reduce it to n logarithm n. And here, we just want to treat also very large systems. So therefore, it's good to come from this particle picture to the picture where we have a larger system described in terms of statistical density function in phase space. So this is a function of, this density is defined in the as a function of a position, velocity, and also changes with the with time, evolves in time. Advantages of this approach are that this is first principle approach. This is also a single run method, so we run the code once, and we get information about interesting observables. And what is also, Boltzmann equations are able to follow non-equilibrium processes, so there are no some assumptions made about some about the equilibrium in the system. It's we evolve it up initio, so we define primary conditions, and then we go through all non-equilibrium states of the evolution. And then computational costs do not scale with number of atoms. They only depend on the accuracy with which we can have to treat the primary statistically defined density function. So if this is a smooth function, we don't need too many grid points to parameterize it, and the computational costs are low. The difficulty of the approach is that using that requires advanced numerical methods, so it should be some algorithm that are able to treat it both accurately and also keep the stability. So this is these are the main features. And now I present the equations in the simplified form. So for the systems that we are treating, these equations treat both the electron density and also the ion densities in the sample. So we have one equation for the evolution of the electron density and nj equations for the evolution of ionic states, where nj defines the maximal ion charge that can be created in the system. So this is in fact a set of equations. Left-hand side is a usual Vlasov equation in the presence of the total electromagnetic force acting on ions and electrons, and it includes also interactions between the charges. and also interaction with the external laser field. On the right-hand side, there are interaction terms, collision terms. They describe the changes of electron and ions densities at some time t. And these changes are due to the short-range processes like collisions and photoabsorptions. And the number of and also variety of processes involved strongly depends on the radiation wavelength. So if I would write this whole equation, it would be much more larger than this one line. But here we put information about all short-range processes involved into the dynamics. So these equations can be... So in order to solve these equations, we need both to apply some algorithm for the solving the equations and also have to get some knowledge about the participating processes. So this is combining these two things leads finally to a quite well working Boltzmann solver. Then here we work with spherical samples. So this additionally simplified our analysis. And we could reduce the problem to the one dimension in real space and one dimension in the velocity space. This Boltzmann solver that I'm describing here investigates non-equilibrium phase of evolution of irradiated samples until the thermalization of electrons in the system is reached. And it uses angular momentum expansion for the density function with the dominating isotropic component, which is an appropriate assumption for the non-equilibrium phase of sample evolution. And there is also an evolution equation for the first transport component and for the transport coupled to the for the component coupled to the laser field. And then if we come to the second part that I will describe, so if the sample starts to evolve, instead of isotropic component, we have a radially expanding component. So this is another Boltzmann solver used for that. Of course, it's important that we control what Boltzmann does. So we make a lot of tests in order to be sure that we don't create artifacts here. We check flow control in real space and check how many particles and how much energy can escape from the simulation box. Because all this, the whole simulation is embedded in the simulation box of the final size. So it means we have sample and then we have some empty space that is later filled by the electrons that are escaping during the evolution. So we wanted to be sure that our simulation box is large enough and not particles of positive energy are not escaping and not falsifying the physical picture. Then we also check at conservation slow with a good accuracy. We also control that if we describe the evolution with Boltzmann, it can be is checked with the analytical model and the consistency is good. And also because we are using the pseudo-spectral approximation to describe this, in fact, differential integral equation, we also check it in some simplified case with an independent method just to be sure that there is no errors. So it's pretty... Now I presented you a tool, and then I would like to present a few applications that Boltzmann was successful, and then I will just make some outlook and for the future. So. Our primary motivation was to construct a tool that is able to describe the results obtained with the cluster experiments performed at the FLASH facility at DAISY. I show it at the moment a bit historical parameters because now FLASH is under upgrade. So before it was working between 6.5 and 50 nanometers, the energy was between 10 and 100 microjoules, and the pulse duration was between 10 and 100 femtosecond. Then I again come to the slide that was already shown by Christoph Bostedt about motivation for experimental studies on clusters irradiated with intense free electrolytic pulses. Clusters are very good for testing processes because they just merging between gas and solid phase. They can be also very small, can be very large. So mechanisms of energy absorption ionization can be identified. Also, there is access to information about nonlinear processes, timescales of electron emission and ion motion, and new processes can be identified. And a bunch of experiments has been performed, and recently, so the oldest experiment was 2002, at the irradiation with 100 nanometers, then we had 32 and 13 nanometers within this time. And finally, Christoph reported about this fascinating primary results from the results performed at the LCLS. Now I show, of course, experimental group that is led by Thomas Müller and also collaborators, with many thanks to them for letting us these experimental results to be worked on. Coming to the theoretical description, if we have the irradiated samples, we have two phases of the evolution. It's just speaking roughly. The first phase is a non-equilibrium ionization phase. It starts with the irradiation by photons, and it lasts until the electrons become thermalized. It's not that whole plasma is thermalized, only electrons. Ions can be still cold. And then this phase takes, depending upon the size of the class of the sample and also radiation dose, we estimated that the thermalization timescale can be is usually less than 3 times the duration of the free electron laser pulse. Then there is a much longer phase. This is semi-equilibrium expansion phase. Electrons and ions start to thermalize together. But of course, at the same time, there is also escape of ions, electrons from the outer shells of the samples that leads to the expansion of the samples. Timescale of this process is picosecond. So we are very much concentrated with our Boltzmann simulation on this first phase. It is very good described with Boltzmann. It's strongly non-equilibrium. Now I start to show the results from the Boltzmann. So the first bunch of wavelength was 100 nanometers, and this was this first experiment performed in 2002. It was really striking because here you can see that there are results from the irradiation of single atoms and the clusters that are changing size from 20 to 90,000. So at the same fixed fluence of the pulse, from the irradiation of atoms, only single charged atoms were observed, whereas for the clusters changing size from 20 to 90,000, also higher charges were observed, and at 90,000 even charges up to plus 8 could be seen. So this was really pointing out that there is some kind of a collective process that is due to the environment within the cluster that is responsible for this enhanced energy absorption. And it was and so very intense theoretical discussion over a few years and dedicated studies performed to explain this enhanced energy absorption. So here I would like to mention three main approaches, three main models to propose it to explain this effect. The first one was proposed by Robin Santra and Chris Green. It was enhanced inverse Bremsstrahlung heating of quasi-FLIR electrons within the cluster. And this was obtained with the effective atomic potential. In high charge states, electrons were heated through the inverse Bremsstrahlung process. They were collide, and these high charge states were produced during collision ionizations. The second model was proposed by the group of Jan-Michael Rost, and this was a model proposing that high charge states within clusters are produced by the single photoabsorptions that are possible due to the strong suppression of the interatomic potential barriers within the cluster environment. And the third model, this was grouped by of Thomas Brabeck, was proposing another efficient mechanism of the heating of quasi-free electrons through many-body recombination. And then through this many-body recombination, more and more electrons could be pumped into the system, and energetic electrons were producing high charge states during collisional ionizations. So finally, it was, I would say, us. And we asked the questions, what happens if we could try to include all these enhancement factors into one model? So we constructed the Boltzmann formalism, and then we tried to somehow take care of all these processes proposed by the colleagues. So in our model, creation of charged state is through photoionizations. Then these created cold electrons are heated by inverse Bremsstrahlung, proposed by Robin Santra and Chris Green. And then we get high energy energetic electrons, and they collide with ions and atoms, and they create higher charges. There are also free body recombination taken into account. We also take into account modification of atomic potentials by plasma environment, by electron screening and ion surrounding the atoms, but we use for that a plasma model. It's called hybrid model that also extrapolates between weak and strongly coupled regime. And we also, during our simulation, we tested within the framework of our model, I say within the framework of this model, plasma parameters and possible contribution of many body effects within the framework of this model was small. Finally, we also, using the same cross-sections and the same formalism, we performed independent in-house MD simulations. It was performed by my PhD student, and they were in quite good agreement with the Boltzmann results. So it again shows that we are not biased by the method. The results. So I will be showing some results here. So it's again 100 nanometers. Thomas obtained results for clusters composed of 2,500 xenon atoms, and they were irradiated with three electron laser pulses of different fluences. And experimental data histograms are plotted with the black curves. Time of flight detectors detect only ions, so we don't have evidence on the neutrals. And then we have compared with our predictions obtained for the clusters in the focus, and clusters average over the Gaussian profile of the pulse, because clusters are not necessarily in focus, but there is also they can be within certain area, and then we have to average over the profile of the pulse in order to get correct predictions. So we can see that agreement with the data is quite good, so we reproduce the trend. Also taking into account that the fluence for this free electron laser experiment, this first free electron experiment, was estimated with a certain error, so it looks quite good. Now we have another set of data. We have clusters of various size, but they are now irradiated with the pulses of a fixed flux, again, of course, within this experimental accuracy. So clusters 20 atoms, 250 atoms, 70, and 90,000. And again, our model can reproduce quite well the trend that with the increasing cluster size, we produce much more higher charges. So here we produce only plus 2 for the 20 atoms. For 90,000, we can just produce up to plus 7 charges. Then for the same wavelength, we went also for the electron spectroscopy data, just again to test, to show what Boltzmann can do about that. And we have electron emission spectra at 100 nanometers for xenon 70 and argon 30 clusters. And here there are the experimental data plotted with, this is just this green curve. And for that, we also make our predictions for the from Boltzmann, and also this in-house molecular dynamic simulations, and we could obtain the predictions of the temperature of the emitted electrons. It's also quite good agreement for xenon 70, 6.5 and 7.1, and for argon 300, it's 2.8 compared to 3.5. So this also indicated that there is some heating of electrons here. Then we changed the wavelength because we went also to the 32 nanometers and not to our surprise, but the physical picture of dynamics here is quite difficult because in this regime, Invert-Bremsstrahlung is not contributing much to the ionization dynamics. It's mostly that we have a single ionization, so sequence of single ionization, photoionizations, and then collisional ionization by electrons. So the primary model, this was a static model, proposed by Rostock group with Thomas Fennell, also already explained quite good the data, but we performed this full kinetic simulation for the using Boltzmann, and then we obtained the predictions for, again, argon 80 and argon 150 irradiated at different fluences. So we saw that at low fluence, we could reproduce that there is only photoelectron peak here, and this is correct. But with the increasing fluence, more electron, more and more collisional ionization, and there is also this thermal tail created here, and we could also reproduce it with the data. Again, we got good agreement with the results of our molecular dynamics simulation, but also with the independent MD simulations by the Rostock group. So it's somehow very nice that it is a consistent picture. Then I was just sent here a few words about the imaging because Christoph was showing very nice data from the LCLS about the imaging, but there were only diffraction images. We wanted to say that there is also some data recorded at 13.7 nanometers from the imaging first experiment of the imaging of clusters. And this was reconstructed by my PhD student. He collaborated with Henry Chapman. And so obtained results shown the two clusters here in direct contact, or you can also have an image of a single cluster. So this is this shows that the penetration depth of the light is quite low here, so the middle of the cluster is cannot be seen, and only light penetrates until here. I showed it because it means that if we could image clusters, we could also get a feedback. So it means we could get the information about how clusters are evolving, what is the dynamics within the clusters. So I'm very much looking forward to this data from LCLS and to the future experiments with cluster imaging. Then I will be coming to another bunch of experiment. So we had so far wavelength 100 nanometer, 32, and now I will show results from the wavelength 13 nanometers. I was invited by the colleagues who are performing the warm dense matter experiments of soft X-ray Thomson scattering in warm dense hydrogen. And it was a liquid hydrogen jet heated by the free electron laser. And we wanted to see how the non-equilibrium evolution of this hydrogen is performing. So collaboration, this is a big collaboration called peak brightness collaboration between DAISY, University of California, Berkeley, Jena, Livermore, University of Oxford, and Justin Work is present here, and University of Rostock. And I think Boltzmann was quite useful because it could reproduce quite well experimental data obtained for the dependence of the electron temperature, because of course during the irradiation more and more electrons are released, they have instantaneous temperature, and there is a plot of electron temperature, instantaneous electron temperature as a function of the density of the free electrons. And then it was very good to use different impact ionization model just to test the influence of them on the dynamics. And for the model that is seems to be quite well dedicated for this kind of simulation, this is classical electron-electron collision with the emphasis on the low angle scattering, we got quite good agreement with the recorded data. For using the BEB model, the agreement is less good, but I mean it's still for this 60 microjoule estimate is within one of the estimates of the experimental data. I just wanted to say that for this simulation we were also using clusters, but they were very large clusters, so we were changing the size until we saw that there is no change of the results, so that we are not biased by surface effect. So the simulations could be performed for samples consisting of half of a million atoms. And this was, I must say, not too much computational effort. So here there are also data from our simulation that were in quite a good agreement with the experiment, predictions on the temperature, and also on the degree of ionization. This was very nice that it was consistent. Yeah, and now I would like, because this is a coherence session, to say something about how our approach could be useful for the imaging. So it was again this nice experiment shown by Christoph Bostedt about the delayed ionization and expansion through tampering. This was primarily proposed by Stefan Haurige. And experiment was performed at 13 nanometers and showed that if we have here the xenon cluster inside and we cover it with the layer of the argon atoms, depending on the size of the layer, we get less ionization inside. So this means that, of course, if we would take a biological sample and cover it with the some material, then we expect that we get less ionization inside, so less damage inside the biological sample, and also its evolution will be slowed down. And we are now performing the simulations for the other case. So this is not in the region of the giant resonance, but 32 nanometers. And we are testing two different situations. So we test inside of argon and surrounded by the xenon clusters. And we have xenon inside and surrounded by the shell of argon. And we can see astonishingly that the behavior is quite different. So in this situation, we get more ionization inside of the cluster if we have the xenon shell around. And in the case that corresponds to the experimental situation, we get less neutrals inside. So it strongly depends what kind of species is used for this kind of a tampering. And then finally, it's a kind of study that we were also performing in the context of the tampering method, because so far, I heard several times that if we have this sample, a biological sample covered with the water layer, then the effect of water layer averages out. So we performed a dedicated study if this structural information and orientational information about the biological object is somehow affected by the presence of the water layer. So the study is quite simple, but I think it's pointing out that this effect cannot be neglected. We took a satellite tobacco necrosis virus of the object size was 17 nanometers, and we covered it with the water layer of different thickness. And then we were looking how much information we can still retrieve from the diffraction images. So I don't have much time to come into the details. We were having a lot of patterns created. So we calculated the correlation between the patterns. And we saw that for this perfect simulation, with, there is no water layer, and there is also no Poissonian noise. So pretty, I would say, study case. We get, of course, a correlation 1 if the images are for the same images. But this correlation strongly reduced if we introduce water layers or if we introduce Poissonian noise. So there is a strong reduction in this correlation. So this means that it would be much more difficult to orient samples if we have a water layer around, and of course if we include this effect of the Poissonian noise. And finally, we also get some nice fit for this correlation function. This is exponential. And we also got the information that is not shown here, that it would be difficult concerning structural information, that it is difficult to get information above the water peak, because this is dominated by the contribution of the water. So final conclusion is that in this kind of experiment, there is a kind of a water layer that is still can be used for tampering, because still you can retrieve a lot of structural and orientational information. But on the other side, this water layer should not be too thick, because then you lose the information. So this does not average out. Okay, so now I can come to my summary and also to the outlook. So concerning this cluster simulation, I believe that we constructed a useful tool for studying the evolution of free electron laser irradiated samples. And this is what is our goal, computationally efficient treatment of large samples. Our model was so far the only one that gives accurate description of all experimental data from clusters at 100 nanometers and 32 nanometers wavelength. We also got good agreement with the data from warm dense matter hydrogen experiment. And we plan to study, study more problems in the future, evolution of clusters irradiated with XEUV and X-rays, cluster of various structures, so this study is already underway. Also test different mechanisms of slowing down cluster explosion and samples exposed to ultra-short or ultra-intense pulses. Ultra-short, it's very good because this is very non-equilibrium evolution and Boltzmann can follow that. And so this is application for the clusters, but the potential application of Boltzmann method can be much more broader. We have also a project that is aiming at applying this kinetic equation approach for solids. So it's a combination of it's a hybrid code that combines the molecular dynamic evolution of atoms and ions and kinetic equation approach for description of the evolution of the electron density. And the bond structure is also taken into account using tight binding method. So one application is for solids, another, here we were evolving with the Boltzmann only single particle density, but also many body densities can be evolved with, so one can write equations many body particle densities and then also evolve them. And I mean, the methodology is there, so this kind of equations can be now solved because the solver is there. And there's, of course, only a matter of application, so solids, correlated systems. So this is, I think, quite interesting method to be studied and very efficient for large samples. So much more efficient than following the movement of each electron. So with that, I would like to thank for your attention and yeah.
Well, for the water jacket, I think it's extremely interesting work. And in the electrospray, of course, they can make a thin water jacket. The biologists would say that the first few layers of water are part of the protein. So I don't know why we can't just include it in the structural analysis.
Yeah, I mean, we just include it. So this means we make a simulation of a virus.
Yeah.
And then we make a simulation with the virus, cover it with a water layer, changing the thickness of the water layer, and see how the correlations are changing. So how much orientational information is preserved. So we compare single patterns from this analysis and see how the correlation function is changing. It can be done better, of course, but this was I must say, we were just aiming at the kind of a simple approach just to show that this effect is there. It does not ever reach out. We have, we lose the information, and we also can have problems in applying a classification algorithm, even within this very simple framework of comparing pattern to pattern, because we lose information.
But if the water positions were the same on every, around every protein, and you had atomic resolution data, you could determine the positions of the waters as well as the protein.
Yeah, but I mean,
no,
I don't think so. I mean, it's not yet certainly not yet atomic resolution here. Consider it. So that's, we have layers of a random water, and yeah.
Beata, I have a question with respect to the Boltzmann model, which I've shown at the beginning. I have shown it for the 100 nanometer case that you have electrons which leave the cluster with temperatures of around 7 electron volt or 5 electron volt.
Yeah.
Now, one can imagine that at these temperatures, the dynamics of the plasma is also can be influenced by quantum effects such as quantum fluctuations and so on. Can you include them in your model since it's continuous?
Yeah, so you are of course right, because we come from this cold plasma regime, but this is a very short time. So this is of course a kind of, I would say, intrinsic error that we have in the simulation, but the heating is very efficient. So this phase that we have, a very cold plasma, is very short. Mm-hmm. But so I think in principle Boltzmann could be extended, and I am not biased, so this approach is not biased in the sense that you can only have this semi-classical treatment. You can also extend it for quantum systems. So I mean, the methodology is there, and then you just write the right equations for. And I think it was already a paper by the Rostock group that was treating using a kinetic approach for the silver clusters. So then they had to take into account that there is also the degeneracy, and then yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, so you showed radiation damage for clusters at 32 nanometers,
yeah,
in these models. And now my question is, what will happen when the different wavelengths, like eventually people want to use 1.5 angstrom or 1 angstrom axis. It seems to me that the damage mechanism will be quite different between 32 nanometers versus 1.5 angstrom.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether the model you are doing now will be kind of you can use same model for this complete different wavelength, much shorter wavelength case. What kind of a difference? What kind of different radiation damage mechanism will happen at 1.5 angstrom?
Yeah, this is just a kind of a preliminary study. So we just have this 30 nanometers wavelength, and we show that depending on the, for example, already the sequence of the species, xenon inside or argon outside, we get different behavior of the of this ionization within the cluster. Of course, if you would go for this short wavelength, I would not stay with the noble gases. I would go already for carbon, and I try to surround it with some other material. So, I mean, it's of course at this short wavelength, there are a lot of inertial processes, so the dynamics is different. But we wanted just to test, how to say, the principle on this 32 nanometers wavelength. So see that this evolution depends on the evolution dynamics depends on the what is inside, what is outside. So this is a kind of a preparation study for that.
My question is whether the principle can be extended to shorter wavelengths. That's my question. Right now, I mean, eventually you want inner-shell electron ionization. Whether so far, I mean, a lot of group studies really, most experiment done at the soft deck and really not a soft EUV, like a 13 nanometers or 32. Whether those experiment results can be, really the principle will be same at shorter wavelengths. I don't know, so I'm just, I'm not an expert necessarily. I just want to hear your opinion on whether those principles will be similar or whether it's extendable.
I would not speculate here on the time scales, because this might be completely different, because there are other processes involved here. But I think that the general trend would be the same. So I mean that shouldn't be changed. So that tampering should also work at X-rays, but one has really to perform a dedicated simulation for that, taking into account the processes. We hope that if we obtain the interesting results, there will be still an experiment performed at 32 nanometers at flash, just for these structures, xenon, argon. So this is not that we are just making at the moment on this theoretical study, but we hope that if the results are interesting, that it can be tested also. So.
Yeah, there is a paper, DRL, already published, demonstrating the tampering effect. I should mention that.
Mm.
The flash rate interaction with and without tamper.
Yeah.
And found that the time was slow.
Yeah, I mean, it's we are not the first group, of course, to investigate that. So I don't make the statement that I just discovered tampering. I'm just saying that with the Boltzmann, we can analyze the different species. We can follow the non-equilibrium evolution. We have a tool for that. And we also analyze what is the effect of this tamper on the structural information. So this is my statement. This is not that we are just making something for the first time.
Does your theory fit the experiment?
So 32 nanometers, not, because there are no evidence for that. There are not experimental data. But I would expect that we can have experiment. Thomas is already interested to perform such experiment at the flash after upgrade and have a look. But finally, the goal is imaging. So it means it's anyway we have to go to shorter wavelengths. So it's.
Yeah, I have a question concerning the scattering images and the reconstruction you showed for the cluster. Yeah. What was the size of these clusters?
I can just, best I will show it because I don't remember. So here the time, here the scale is 100 nanometers. This is the small bar. So I would say it's something like the diameter is something like 500 nanometers.
So that means you said that the penetration depths, you see the penetration depths of the radiation. So this is on the order of the wavelength? Or is no, that's longer, right?
Yeah, that's longer. That's longer.
So okay, so this is a really huge cluster.
But it is. We checked that there. This is a huge cluster. So one can already see that this interior is dark, and you can only see this ring around. And finally, it was also, so my PhD student also make a prediction because we have this, maybe I should mention that these clusters in direct contact. So using some fancy methods, you can also estimate what is the distance in Z direction between these two clusters. And so there's some information that can be already extracted from these pictures. But I mean, LCLS pictures would be really very nice to analyze.
Your Boltzmann theory is very reminiscent of the field theories of multi-component classical fluids, but those are usually formulated in terms of densities and the current densities of a component, while in your case you also had to introduce velocity of a component's velocity distribution as the primary variable. So what is the advantage of doing that? Is it simply because your kinetic equations are strongly sensitive to the velocity of the components, or?
I have access in the sense also to the energy changes because I control, I know about the spatial evolution and also how the energetic evolution of the sample takes place. So I have just a full phase space information, R and V. So it's, and in a classical approximation, of course. Which is working here okay because this is a classical system. So we control plasma parameters during the simulation and we know that this is this regime.
I have a question back to the clusters and the reconstruction. It seemed that density was not monotonous. One of the images was,
okay.
If you look at the...
I'm just trying to, not going back, yeah. But... showing this. No, I just go back. Sorry.
If you go back once more,
the
big cluster on the left hand side. If it was true that the amplitude is reflects the fact that you have absorption inside, you go from blue to yellow to red and then to yellow again, which looks more like. Yeah.
It's a thick object, so it's,
yeah.
You have to treat it as a electromagnetic medium.
Yes.
You get all kinds of properties.
Yeah.
You're reconstructing an exit wave, not just.
Yeah, but why should the exit wave, I mean, if you had a contour plot of the left image, then it wouldn't look like the shadow graph, even if it's saturated, if it's an object of homogeneous density.
Yeah.
And so you make a model to see if you're getting those two parts of the refractive index correct.
Mm-hmm.
By getting the, you know, the amplitude going way down like that, right?
Yeah, I think that would be very interesting. The problem is also that if we have a sufficient resolution here just to get this information, because I remember that my student was really fighting hard to get some resolution, but it's not so good. So, but yeah, I mean, certainly it's worthy trying.
So, Beata, for your composite clusters, xenon, argon, or yeah, also for the temper, we know that field ionization is very important, that you build a huge background charge, positive background charge, let's say more or less in the center, mm-hmm, that absorbs stronger, and then bound electrons from the outer temper or shells, whatever is there, the other species, are just sucked in. How is that included in your model?
So in this calculation at 32 nanometers, we do not include it. And I would say, I just say completely honestly, we base on the estimates that we were making earlier for 100 nanometers, that this effect of the secondary ionization on our, in our case, was not so strong. But Boltzmann can also include it, because I was once already preparing this for the simulation. So if we want to go to the X-rays where this effect is certainly strong, we will take into account. So it's doable.
I mean, you have to model all that. You have to get some comparison and then define rates. Is that correct, roughly speaking? You have to put into your equations an extra term describing that.
Yeah.
And that's based on some, from your MD simulations or whatever results where you get the strengths of this process and so on.
Exactly. So this means that I have to calculate the gradient of the field, and if it is sufficient enough, then I get this effect, I get this ionization.
Any other questions? We still have a couple minutes. Okay, well then, say we thank the speaker again.
Thank you very much.
Move on. The next speaker is Brian Stevenson from Argonne.